I'm Bruce Barber, and this is Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center and an internationally known expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist and the director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. Ken specializes in pain and palliative care. If you have a question that you'd like to submit about cancer, please email us at canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. And if you're interested in listening to past editions of Yale Cancer Center Answers, each segment is posted on the Yale Cancer Center website at yalecancercenter.org. This evening, Ken can't be with us, but Ed Chu talks about the detection and treatment of lung cancer with Dr. Scott Gettinger and Dr. Roy Decker.
So Scott, maybe let's just start off by telling our listeners, you know, what is lung cancer and how common a disease is it?
Lung cancer is a common malignancy. It affects a little over 200,000 persons in the United States yearly. It affects men, women, smokers, and non-smokers. It's a disease primarily of the elderly, but we do see it in younger patients. I have patients in their 30s with lung cancer. Although not the most common cancer, it is the most common cause of death in the United States from cancer. In fact, if you combine the deaths from breast cancer, prostate cancer, and colon cancer, they don't equal the amount of deaths from lung cancer in a year.
And again, typically, you know, what age group are we talking about, by and large, for patients with lung cancer?
50% of the patients present over the age of 65. The median age is 70 years.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what are some of the common symptoms? Maybe Roy, you can kind of jump in here also. You know, what are some of the common symptoms that patients with the lung cancer will present with?
Well, generally, patients can present with symptoms from, you know, the progression of the disease in their chest. They can have difficulty breathing. And unfortunately, the disease tends to spread throughout the body before diagnosis, and so patients can present with overall body, what we call constitutional symptoms of tiredness, fatigue, weight loss, and really just a failure to thrive.
And what are some of the, you know, common risk factors for developing lung cancer?
Well, primary risk factor is smoking. There are other risk factors. Radon is a gas that exists in the air and can accumulate in different structures, primarily basements, and that can we believe lead to lung cancer. Asbestos is more of a risk factor for mesothelioma, but with smoking, it increases your risk of lung cancer.
So smoking really by far and away is the number one cause risk factor.
Yes.
And is there any truth to the fact that if one stops smoking, that one can eliminate completely the risk for developing lung cancer down the road?
No. But if you do smoke, the risk of you developing lung cancer goes down substantially. The more years out, the less chance that you're going to have it, but you'll always have a higher risk than the general population of developing a lung cancer.
And Roy, what do we know about this issue of secondhand smoke and secondhand lung cancer, which we hear a lot about in newspaper reports?
Well, you know, it does seem that significant exposure to secondhand smoke causes people to develop some of the same metabolites that smokers do, and we think that does put them at risk for lung cancer. It's always difficult to tell. Certainly, smokers have a higher risk, but we do feel that environmental exposure to smoke also puts you at risk for lung cancer.
And what's known about the genetics of lung cancer? You know, so if there's a family history of lung cancer, does that increase the risk for, you know, a family member developing lung cancer down the road?
There is definitely a family component to it, and patients can have history of not only lung cancer but other cancers. And we're beginning to learn a little bit about the molecular underpinnings of lung cancer. Here at Yale, we're actually specifically looking into this and trying to design a trial where we're looking for patients at high risk, and part of that risk assessment is family history.
Hmm. What are some of the specific genes that are being looked at?
Also EGFR mutations, which occur in maybe 10 to 15% of the patients. This is an important pathway for cancer. It's called the epidermal growth factor receptor pathway, and we actually have targeted therapies that treat this patient population.
So if someone, you know, feels more short of breath, a lot of cough, chest discomfort, you know, malaise, fatigue, you know, what should they do next? Who should they go see, and how should they get things evaluated?
You know, I think everything should start with your primary care doctor. And, you know, a lot of these patients, being long-term smokers, do have other pulmonary problems. And so many are followed by pulmonologists, lung specialists. And, you know, the cause of those kind of symptoms in someone who is a smoker, you know, is not always lung cancer. There's certainly a lot of other benign things that can cause those kind of symptoms. So they do need a thorough evaluation.
And special x-rays that would need to be done then to further evaluate?
Typically, an evaluation would start with a chest x-ray, and in most of those patients would be followed up with a CT scan of the chest. You know, there has been some interest in screening lung cancer patients with CT scans, but it has not yet really been shown to really impact on the quality of life or the survival of patients with lung cancer.
Now, as I understand, in following up to that, Roy, there I guess have been some mixed reports, right? And we've been hearing in the literature. Some say that screening with this high resolution CT may be beneficial. Some say it isn't. Maybe we can get both of your views as to what is the potential role for CT scanning.
There have been two studies that have recently been presented in major medical journals. The first trial that was presented suggested that there was a potential survival advantage to screening patients who have a high risk of lung cancer. However, a subsequent trial, which was presented in the last few months, suggested that there is no survival advantage, and the only thing that CT screening is doing is it's finding tumors earlier. That does not necessarily translate into survival advantage for many different reasons. One reason is that the nodules or tumors that they find might be more benign and might never cause a problem. So even if you do detect them, it's not necessarily going to improve survival. CT screening can be potentially problematic because a majority of patients, actually, you'll find some abnormality, and the question is, what do you do with this abnormality? Do you biopsy it? Do you follow it with CAT scans? And once you tell a patient there's a shadow on your lung, a patient obviously will have some psychological stress and have to wait until the next CAT scan. These patients sometimes will have biopsies, which are really not necessary, that can cause problems, complications. So right now, I think that our feeling here at Yale is that there is no role yet for CT screening in high-risk patients, although patients are encouraged to enroll in clinical trials that are looking at this. Presently, there are two major clinical trials looking at this. The one in the United States is comparing screening with CTs versus screening with x-rays in patients, and we already know that x-rays do not improve survival in terms of patients who are diagnosed with lung cancer at an earlier stage.
But it may be also, at least for x-rays, that they're not sensitive enough to pick up lesions, right?
Definitely.
Relative to CAT scans.
CT scanning picks up many more early-stage lung cancers. However, we do not know if that will translate into improved survivals in the population.
Right. We have an email from Timothy who says, I'm a 56-year-old male and smoked for 10 years when I was younger. Is there a way to improve my health and further decrease the risk of developing lung cancer?
You know, this is a very common question that we get both from our patients who have completed treatment and from their family members who are obviously thinking about reducing their own risk. And I think the most important thing to do is to encourage these patients to continue to not smoke and to limit any other exposure they have. There have been many trials of what we call chemo prevention for lung cancer, and that is trying to prevent lung cancer in patients just like Timothy. These have been conducted over in Finland and in the United States, and as of yet have not really found that the addition of routine vitamins or other nutritional supplements prevent lung cancer. And in fact, in some trials, it has seemed to increase the incidence of lung cancer. So at this point, I don't feel that any firm recommendation can be made for supplement use. So, you know, my recommendation is usually to encourage the patient to continue to not smoke. And then in terms of reducing the risk of other cancers, to continue to try to follow a low-fat, high-fiber diet.
Okay. And any other lifestyle changes that we can recommend to Timothy and our listeners out there?
Well, other than not smoking and trying to avoid places where there is a lot of smoke, for example, if a family member smokes, Hopefully they can smoke in another part of the house, or even better, outside. Put them in the garage. But other than that, you know, routine follow-up with your physician and health maintenance, and otherwise there's not much else I think that we can recommend at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, many folks out there, I think, believe that patients diagnosed with lung cancer, you know, have poor outcomes by and large. What are your thoughts on that? Is that truth or part of myth?
Part of myth. I think the majority of patients who present with early stage disease are cured of their cancers, and that's usually with surgery, possibly with chemotherapy. Patients with more advanced, what we call locally advanced disease, we can cure a good amount of them, maybe one in four of them. And even patients who have metastatic disease with newer therapies and supportive treatments, patients are living well over a year with good quality of life. So I definitely think that people can do well once they have a diagnosis of lung cancer.
And again, you know, how do you approach patients with early stage, more advanced stage of lung cancer here at the Yale Cancer Center?
I think the most important part of the evaluation of a patient with lung cancer is a multidisciplinary approach. And, we're very lucky to work with Frank Detterbeck, who's a famous thoracic surgeon here at Yale. And all of our patients undergo a thorough evaluation, and they meet with Dr. Gettinger, who specializes in the chemotherapy for lung cancer, and one of our radiation oncologists, a thoracic surgeon and a pulmonologist. We have a lot of imaging available here, and it's relatively routine to obtain CT scans and PET scans and MRIs. And additionally, I think every patient has to be evaluated for their underlying pulmonary disease. Many of these patients have difficulty with breathing, and that's really going to impact the treatment choices down the line. So once we've gone through that, we get together as a group and we discuss what we feel would be the best approach to treating the patient, whether that be surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, or some combination.
Okay, great. Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to canceranswers@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this time, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about lung cancer and the latest advances in treatment of lung cancer with our special guest, Dr. Scott Gettinger and Roy Decker from the Yale Cancer Center.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2007, over 11,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone. Early detection is the key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for this disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving this disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu. And I'm here in the studio with my special guest experts, Dr. Scott Gettinger and Roy Decker, discussing the latest treatment options for patients with lung cancer. And before the break, we were talking with Dr. Decker about the multidisciplinary clinic here at the Yale Cancer Center. And again, for our listeners out there, both Drs. Gettinger and Decker are part of the thoracic oncology program, which really, I think, has perhaps developed the multidisciplinary clinic approach to the greatest extent of all of the different disease teams that we have here at the Yale Cancer Center. So when a patient is evaluated and reviewed by your TOP program, as you call it, how are the decisions made as to whether or not a patient undergoes surgery, chemotherapy, radiation therapy? Maybe you can start off, Scott.
So all new patients who present to the Yale Cancer Center, whether they present to a pulmonologist, a surgeon, medical oncologist, They all get evaluated in one of our tumor boards where we all get together and we look at their slides, their pathology slides, we look at their imaging studies. And in the room, we have radiation oncologists, we have surgeons, thoracic surgeons, pulmonologists, pathologists, radiologists, social workers, and a host of other individuals. And together, we make a decision as what the diagnosis is, what stage the patient is in, and what the best treatment modality is. So in this situation, I think more heads is better, you know, and we clearly have changed our, you know, decisions based on what the input from a pathologist or a radiologist, and it's very helpful. And I think that's what's somewhat lacking maybe in the community, where they certainly see a lot of patients with many different types of malignancies. But, you know, here at Yale, at least in the thoracic program, what we see, you know, every day is lung cancer. So we are more aware of, I think, the nuances of it.
So when would we typically consider surgery as the main modality of treatment?
So as you asked earlier, in terms of what stages, what are the different stages of lung cancer, there's three general groupings of lung cancer. There's actually four stages, but I look at it as three different groups. The first group is early stage lung cancer. And what that basically means is that your tumor is limited to either the lung or to lymph nodes within the lung. And these are patients with stage 1 and 2 disease. And the goal of treatment in these patients is cure. And the way we do that is surgery followed by possibly chemotherapy, depending on the characteristics of your tumor and of the radiographs. The next grouping is locally advanced disease, which most often means that you have lymph nodes in the center of your chest, outside the lung, but not distant. And these patients we treat for cure as well. And the way we treat them is with combination chemotherapy and radiotherapy. It's a very aggressive approach. But again, the goal of this therapy is cure. And we do cure, depending on the situation, maybe 1 in 4 patients. The role of surgery in this group of patients is unclear, and we do have a clinical trial which is investigating trimodality therapy, meaning chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. Again, a very aggressive approach for a patient who can tolerate it. The final grouping is metastatic disease, and the goal of treatment in these patients is palliation, one, to improve survival, but more importantly, to improve quality of life and to improve symptoms. And we do much better than we did, say, 5-10 years ago with this. We generally use chemotherapy, and we also use other supportive measures such as radiotherapy.
So picking up on radiotherapy, so Roy, you know, When do you kind of come in and say that, you know, radiation therapy really has a key role to play in treating patients with lung cancer?
Well, you know, there's, I think, two main roles for radiation in lung cancer, in the curative treatment of lung cancer. And the mainstay is in patients with what we call locally advanced disease, disease that has spread, you know, to the lymph nodes in the middle of their chest. The mainstay of the treatment for that is going to be radiation in combination with chemotherapy. And advances in imaging and treatment planning and radiation have really made possible some strides in that area to reduce the toxicity of the treatment and to increase its efficacy. Something that we're very excited about at Yale is the role of radiation in early lung cancer. Now, it's important to say that the mainstay of treatment for early lung cancer is always going to be surgery, but there's a substantial number of patients who are really unable to undergo an open or even a minimally invasive surgery for a relatively small lung cancer. And now we have a technique that we call body radiosurgery. And that allows us to treat these tumors with very, very high doses of radiation over only 3 or 4 treatment sessions. So a treatment that used to take 7 weeks and involve significant side effects now can be done in 1 week with really minimal, if any, side effects whatsoever. And the bonus is that it works far, far better than our traditional techniques do. And in fact, it's being compared in randomized trials to surgery over in Japan. And they're talking about doing that in this country as well.
So this technique of radiosurgery would be really used for patients who are not good candidates for surgery?
I think at this point, it would be the standard of care for patients who are not candidates for surgery. Although I have to say that this is where it's really vitally important to have a multidisciplinary approach, because there are now new surgical techniques available. There's minimally invasive thoracic surgery. And so this is where it's really important to get your thoracic surgeon, your medical oncologist, your radiation oncologist, your pulmonologist all in the same room talking about what they can offer a patient and you know what the potential drawbacks would be of each approach.
And Roy, is there any role for radiation therapy once surgical removal of the lung cancer has been done?
Yeah, and this is an area of some controversy, but there's good evidence that when patients have lymph nodes that have spread to the middle of their chest, what we call the mediastinum, that they benefit from radiation after surgery, and this is based on several studies, one of which was pioneered here at Yale, looking at outcomes of patients who were treated with radiation following surgery. So, you know, we tend to evaluate these patients on a case-by-case basis. Many of them we treat with radiation and chemotherapy before surgery. We also have the option of treating them after surgery.
Okay, great. And then just some of the side effects that patients might experience if they, in fact, receive radiation therapy?
So standard radiation involves treatment of not only the tumor, but the surrounding lung tissue, as well as other normal structures that are in the middle of the chest, like the esophagus. So during treatment, the esophagus tends to be the cause of most of the trouble. Patients have a lot of problems with pain on swallowing. They can require pain medications. What we worry most about is the treatment of the normal lung tissue, because the radiation will destroy normal lung tissue that surrounds the tumor. And if we're not meticulous about our radiation treatment planning, we can leave the patients more short of breath than when we started. And that's the advantage of some of the new techniques that we use. We're able to treat less normal tissue while getting more dose into the tumor.
Okay, great. So Scott, turning to chemotherapy, I think one of the really significant advances just over the last few years has been the development of the so-called targeted therapies. Maybe you can explain to our listeners what that means, especially as it relates to the treatment of lung cancer.
The targeted therapy is, you know, it means different things to different folks. And I mean, chemotherapy is targeted in a sense, but it's not very specific. Chemotherapy affects primarily DNA or something called the mitotic apparatus, and it affects anything that grows quickly in the body. So you have many of the side effects that people are concerned about with chemotherapy. Targeted therapy takes advantage of our knowledge of molecular biology, of what is going on at a genetic level and also at a protein level in a cancer, taking advantage of that knowledge and designing therapies that are specifically targeted against that tumor rather than just general things that happen in any cells that divide quickly. In lung cancer, there are two targeted, so-called targeted therapies, which are presently used commonly, are FDA approved. One of them is called Tarceva. Tarceva is a molecule that interferes with the EGFR receptor, epidermal growth factor receptor. Again, we talked about this a little bit earlier. This is a very important pathway in cancer. And in some patients, there's actually mutation. In other patients, it's overexpressed. So this drug, Tarceva, which is a pill, has been shown to improve survival in patients with lung cancer. The other targeted therapy we have is something called Avastin, which is what is called a monoclonal antibody to a molecule that runs in the blood called vascular endothelial growth factor, which is very important in promoting new blood vessel growth. The way a tumor grows is it's fed, and the way it's fed is through the blood. So if we can shut off the blood supply to a tumor, we can have positive effect in terms of treating patients with cancer. So these are two of the agents that we presently use commonly in lung cancer, and actually now we're beginning to combine the both, and preliminary results look very encouraging.
And in fact, you're hoping to actually open up a study here in the not-too-distant future looking at the combination of an anti-angiogenesis strategy and anti-EGFR strategy. Is that right?
We are. It's going to be for the locally advanced group of patients, and we're going to be using the Avastin with chemotherapy to start, and then with the radiotherapy, we're going to use Avastin and Tarceva and chemotherapy, and then after finishing curative intent chemoradiotherapy, we're going to continue patients on the combination of Tarceva and Avastin, the two targeted agents that we have.
So it sounds like a pretty pretty aggressive but very innovative approach to trying to treat patients with lung cancer.
And we're very hopeful about this combination.
Any other clinical trials that you're working on that you'd like to tell our listeners?
We have plenty of clinical trials here at Yale for lung cancer, different types of categories. We have some lung-specific trials. For example, for small cell lung cancer, we have a trial of a novel agent called claretazine. For non-small cell lung cancer, we already have a protocol for the locally advanced patients. We have other trials, which we call phase one trials, which we're offering to our lung cancer patients. I would direct you to the Yale Cancer Center site, where these trials are listed under either lung, solid tumors, or phase one trials.
Well, great. I'd like to thank Drs. Gettinger and Decker for really a terrific session and joining us this evening on Yale Cancer Center Answers. Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu, and for my co-host, Dr. Ken Miller, who's out this week, from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll examine the role that genetic testing can play on our healthcare with Ellen Matloff. She's a research scientist and the director of the Yale Cancer Center Genetic Counseling Program.